White weakness, Aryan power. The problems of today's world can be traced directly to the problems inherent in the white mind. All other problems are simply enabled thereby, and this owing to the historically superlative power and capacity of whites who have employed this capacity in such a way as to bring about the current conditions by act or omission. Throughout the history of the world, the devastation of empire and the ruination of all higher culture established in its origin by the Aryan race, nearly all can be traced to what the writer will herein label white weakness or white fallibility, the susceptibility of the white mind to reduce all higher aims and purposes to inferior levels of existence and thus to drag down the projects, enterprises and actions of the white race to a state of decay, of unsustainability and degeneration. The writer designates by the term white the conventional constellation of ideas associated with this term, what the average man in the street would associate with it and with what it has been historically associated with, namely Caucasian, European, white people. He differentiates this term from that of the Aryan and the Aryan race, by which latter he means the white race elevated to a higher octave of spiritual being, a spiritually superior type that exists within and can only exist within the biological substrata of white, European people. The fallibility of the white mind is not possible in that of the Aryan, and this by virtue of his superior spiritual state, understanding life at a higher level of existence beyond both the animal mind of the pashu beast man and the rational mind of the worldly functionary. Both beast men and the man of reason have their consciousness rooted in the lower planes of being, yet within the human, all too human reality of phenomenal causality, in the spatio-temporal consciousness, if such it may be called, completely lacking in any transcendent state of being. The following purports to constitute a synopsis of factors that are related to the mind of white fallibility. There may be countless others which apply, but these are the few which have occurred to the writer as of the time of this writing: gullibility, emotional reactivity, petty self-interest, pathological altruism, historical amnesia, excessive lenience, hedonism, decadence, hubris, hyper-individualism, solipsism, Saturnian consciousness. Gullibility is a significant factor of white people. By virtue of their Hyperborean origins, they have a consciousness which may be spoken of as not of this world, but rather having divine origins. Accordingly, they are not as savvy as the beast men who are developed in accordance with their world in their having not been genetically engineered or interbred with whatever reptilian entities who created the Jews, or who are simply a miscegenated product of interbreeding, and this to varying degrees within the white population. Hence the non-white beast man has an animal cunning, and on this basis is of a worldly nature, restricted in his consciousness to the phenomenal world and seeking the satisfaction of his base drives, whereas the white population, deriving from what might be called heaven, are detached from the world and on this basis lack the animal cunning of the beast man, and thus are not overly focused on the beast man's deceptions and manipulations. By virtue of the gullibility of the white race, the devious Jew has exploited the fallible white mind and introduced all manner of spookism into his consciousness, in the words of Ben Klassen. The various mind-manipulative ideas of the Jew are inserted as so many viruses into the consciousness of the white by Jewry, and this as divisive means of dividing and conquering people against one another. The receptivity to these ideas and ideologies on the part of whites is a result of their higher consciousness, which, existing in worldly conditions and becoming immersed in them, may become tangled up in the letter of the law and not the spirit, and hence are led astray from truth, winding up amidst the weeds along the byways which deviate from its straight and narrow path. The ideologies are formulated by Jewry to contain truths which are agreeable to their targeted demographic, and which contain all manner of other details in the fine print which are not in any way beneficial for white survival. The white mind becomes immersed in the details of these ideologies or various ideas which seem consistent with the initial truths, or which, prima facie on their surface appearance, appear true but are in reality simulacra. The receptivity of the white mind to such ideas is a result of a failure in its faculty of transcendence, which had become weaker through miscegenation subsequent to the fall of man from the spiritual planes and the divires. Those susceptible to gullibility gravitate toward these ideologies as curiosities and dainties which they partake of as so many sweetmeats, eagerly gobbling up these intellectual and aesthetic dainties as a starveling at a feast gobbles victuals. The inevitable repercussions of such mental gluttony is a bellyache and diabetes of the mind, the high of sugar sweet curiosities and conceptual novelty leading to a subsequent low of intellectual deprivation once the novelty has been assimilated and the questing after more being the inevitable result of the insatiable desire consciousness. Not having a willingness to persevere in less amusing and curious investigation into verifying or disproving the ideology or idea initially partaken of out of a superficial curiosity, or over-eagerness to partake in novel experiences. The ideology's jury serves up as their sweetmeat fare are specifically tailored to render the mind always simultaneously bloated with these crazy ideas on the one hand and deprived of any very sound nourishment on the other. Here the Jew is like the witch in Hansel and Gretel, stuffing Hansel so full of sweets to fatten him up for the slaughter and to induce an intellectual high so that he will come to appreciate his life of slavery in the cage of the illusion matrix of jury until he, the Jew, decides it is time he was slaughtered. It is the mundane's inability to transcend his base-born condition of worldly care and desire. His inability to overcome his decision born of curiosity and a desire to attain or be something other than he is to partake of such poisoned apples of ideology, that brings about his first downgoing. Hence it is a Saturnian consciousness of the mundane which renders them susceptible to seeking that which is other to himself, his tendency toward desire consciousness which chains him to the earth as an earthbound soul questing after purely worldly delights and pleasures. Hence, for the mundane properly so-called he has placed matter over spirit and allowed himself or perhaps had insufficient capacity to resist the gravity of his telluric consciousness. Gullibility is a function for the white mundane owing to his attachment to spirit to a degree and paradoxically his detachment from spirit. In the first case he has an ineptitude in his engagement with the world, his divine origins lead him away from being an adept or worldly wise and cunning figure like the Jew and the beast man non-white. In the second case, that of his detachment from spirit and immersion within the mire of worldliness, he has insufficient self-control to elevate himself from the mire like Baron von Munchausen, extricating himself from the earthbound condition through his own willpower. He pursues curiosities, attempts to engage them and falls from grace owing to his incapacity to toe the line of the worldly. Gullibility thus is the Achilles heel of the white man. The ideological sweetmeats fired up by the Jew for the white man serve the function of leading him astray and away from his spiritual height, poisoning his system simultaneously and, over time, dragging him down to the depths of beast consciousness through triggering his desire nature or rendering him comatose through pseudo-spiritual offerings, theological and intellectual Gordian knots which serve to distract him from his enslavement and intended genocide. The outcome of the gullible white man partaking of the Jewish poisoned apples is observable in the religious fanatics of the nunneries and Dark Age with their self-abasement and self-flagellation. The New Age nostrums of pseudo-spiritual inebriation jury traffics in, and the hippie pacifists who partake of them are another example with their self and other abusive passive aggression and self-extinction of any and all forms of strength and power which latter were at least preserved in Christianism. Both New Age ideology and Piscean Dark Age Christianism are templates or mind programs which condition the consciousness to traverse paths of extinction amounting to death cults that terminate the life force of their adherents over time and transform them into the walking dead or Zions, to use a term of Tim Rifot. These religions, especially those of Abrahamic ideology, create a crystallized consciousness rendering the adherent as Zion neurotic, inhibited and probably possessed by the angelic entities which are invoked through the religious conditioning process. This package of ideology is installed in the mind of the Zion as an egregoric software which amplifies a natural or essential tendency of the white population toward more of its weak points, viz. : emotional reactivity, pathological altruism, excessive lenience, and hubris. Both ideological spheres overlap to a great degree like a Venn diagram, each sharing in many similar properties and serving largely the same purpose of jury, that being the enervation, enslavement and gradual replacement of whites under their hegemony, the gradualistically orchestrated merger with the host of the parasite in a process of symbiosis. With respect to emotional reactivity, both ideologies function to amplify the natural tendency of the mundane who, and this even in the case of whites and antagonism to their god mind and the essence of the Graal, to emotional reactivity, to react to stimuli, to dwell within the lower states of consciousness in the purely emotional level of existence, or at least to an excessive degree. Hence a lack of self-control through detachment from spiritual reality, from the higher planes of existence, is the result, a lack of ability to think clearly and distinctly, and the lack of an ability to obtain or maintain superconsciousness, the faculty of suprarational intuition or intellection as it was spoken of by the medieval scholastics. Emotion superseding reason or higher understanding leads downward to the transient world of spatio-temporal contingency and renders one susceptible to the mutability of emotionalism. The propensity on the part of the white mundane to react emotionally to circumstantial changes is a function of his detachment from the spiritual planes, of his attachment to desire and the confusion induced by the emotionally based nature of the Jewish ideologies. These ideologies are not necessarily designed in all cases with malice aforethought by Jews, but are in many cases a symptom of the Jewish consciousness embodying itself in a theological form. Much emotional pathos of the Magian soul, as Spengler called it, devotional ecstasy before the demiurge, and all manner of theatrical fables born of the visionary mind of the Semite. For the consequence of such an ideology is a mind of a chaotic nature, one which has been subjected to the conditioning of what might be called Semitism, the pathos and hysteria of the Jewish type. In tandem with this state of emotional reactivity is the exploitation of the altruistic other regard of whites through these ideological vectors, which function to transfer white other regard toward all who constitute the ferment of decomposition of the higher culture created through white ingenuity, the crippled, weak and comparatively valueless members of society, and this under the influence of the pathological altruism Jewish ideology generates. Hence the good intentions of whites under the influence of this mental inebriation has bad consequences more often than not, enabling the propagation seemingly without limit of the many-too-many and the nourishing and sustaining of the intermention at the expense of whites as a sick animal, in Nietzsche's words, allowing white blood to be drained into the veins of those already too far gone for redemption. Hence consequently, the suicide creeds invented by Jewry serve to weaken and destroy the white society, through their mental inebriation and slow poisoning, causing the whites to behave in imprudent ways, supporting dysgenic practices at their own expense. The hubris of such as Christians with their desire to play God or to fight the devil and save all souls through their agency is another of the most significant Achilles' heels of the white race. Hence they take upon themselves the role of savior and imitate Christ according to the Judeo-Christian template of salvationism. The white Christian places upon themselves the halo or aureole of sanctity in the name of the Lord, Christ, and presupposes they are divinely appointed to carry out such tasks, amounting to an arrogant implied claim to, 1, having the capacity to help others, and 2, having the truth. Perhaps they are right. Regardless, their hubris laboring under the ideological delusion of Christianism and New Ageism leads to an Icarian flight of pseudo-spiritual praxis, a desire to impose upon all a universal template which, like a cookie cutter of adamant impressed upon the other, simply mutilates the form of the other and leads to its destruction. Perhaps this is a necessary good, and the other in their otherness is a corruption whose otherness simply perpetrates greater corruption in proportion to its existence. And this requires destruction, at least in terms of its syncretic and hybridized cultural form of existence, in order to achieve a more harmonious state of existence, a kingdom of heaven upon earth. New Ageism is simply Christianism redux, a reformulated universal cookie-cutter template designed to be imposed upon all, only instead of being of adamant alone it is given a coating of candy paint. In consequence the same outcome results, and that is the establishment of a mongrelized Jewish theocracy under whatever particular form, with the erasure of whites being the outcome. This is the logical conclusion of the pathologization of white altruism. White altruism is presumably a feature of the blood of the Diviers and is simply perversely twisted by Jewry to bring about even greater harm than would otherwise occur should these ideologies, Jewish psychic influence, or psychic driving, not have been introduced in the first place. Again, it is the pathological influence of ideology coupled with the inherent altruism of whites which causes the damage. Either existing in separation would lack any such potency and deleterious consequences. Hubris is simply an added aspect of these ideologies. Hubris is the motive of white willpower taken in a certain direction with these ideological maps as a guide, the destination of universal peace being the fabulous land to be arrived at and everything standing in its way marked for removal in the building of this Solomon's Temple Zion edifice of heaven on earth. Under the influence of Jewry, hubris had also taken many forms prior to Christendom in the empire-building motivation of whites, whose overemphasis on worldly ambition and conquest was again exploited and amplified by Jewish advisors, best represented in the movie Jude Sus. It is the worldly orientation of the white mundane which leads toward their destruction. Such worldliness or overemphasis on a materialistic focus which has led to the downfall of whites who, in their activity within the world, have focused unduly upon it and also, through their miscegenation with the anthropoids. Such worldliness, when become the focal point of consciousness, leads to a petty self-interestedness, a hyperfocus on ego and self which, in the nadir of the Kali Yuga, our present epoch, is a pervasive phenomenon, indeed the defining character type of our times, pure self and only having regard for others to the extent it serves themselves, a complete divorce from the divine and a total immersion in the mire of materialism and self-seeking. This obsession with material life is encouraged and exploited by the enemy as a means of bringing about an acceleration of the downfall of the white race. Hence, a society of possessive individualism is the outcome, leading to a solipsistic mentality wherein everything exists only for self, and if one dislikes any feature of the experiential manifold of their consciousness, they need only change the channel and view more pleasant scenes. The maxim of the Kali Yuga is not only kill or be killed, but maximize pleasure and minimize pain, and this last even at the expense of the lives of others. Partially related to the pathological altruism of the mundane white mind, especially under the influence of Jewish ideological inebriation, is a propensity of the white mundane towards excessive leniency, a desire to simply forgive and forget and to avoid unpleasantness through acquiescing to transgressions on the part of oneself or others, transgressions of a kind precipitating the harm, loss or injury to oneself or others and typically toward others. This is rooted in the selfish egotism of the mundane white consciousness, of the inability or incapacity of the transcendence of his telluric, worldly orientation. Thus, excessive leniency is largely based upon the worldly mentality. However, it is not exclusively rooted in this lower-minded value system, but rather in that of the altruistic other regard of whites who, genuinely altruistic, have a desire to be charitable, merciful and forgiving of the transgression of others. This capacity is the weak link in the chain of white power which the Jews chisel away at in order to break the bonds and enable their evil intentions, which have thus far been kept in check by whites, and this paradoxically under the influence of Christianism, which has had a restraining effect on the willingness of whites to punish Jewry for their transgressions against universal order, a symptom of their excessive lenience. A direct result of this default tendency of the white mundane toward hedonism and decadence through adhering to the maximum of maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain is a historical amnesia, a direct result also of forgiving and forgetting, and hence a seeming incapacity to learn the lessons of history. As Cornelio Codranu stated, the Jews swims in the sea of our iniquity, and the statement "a country has the Jews it deserves" further underscores this principle. The pathological mode of altruistic other regard and its dual cause of the Graal of the Divyas and the tellurism of a profane divinity are all factors in the unwillingness and partial inability of the white mundane to learn the lessons of previous transgressions, to recognize and observe the law of consequence. The trek of the Jew through the ages has borne witness to the chaos he has brought about in his wake, the introduction of his bacilli and their consequent proliferation to the point of the destruction in whole or in part of the race and its culture in particular times and places. Hence, this most serious feature of white fallibility must be recognized and dealt with as the most serious problem, that of a selfish escapism and refusal to face the law of consequence based upon the law of cause and effect, of causality, not simply the causality of physical reality but that of higher planes, for as above so below, and what appears in higher dimensions has effects at lower dimensions. Hence to refuse to face the truth out of a cowardly or hedonistic desire to maximize pleasure and minimize pain is to fail to live in the truth. To refuse to live in the truth is to live in a world of subordinate causes at best, in the world and not to create a more harmonious reality. Rather, it is to allow reality to continue to degrade and chaos to amplify, which leads to the current period of time. Thus, failing to live in the truth is the ultimate cause of the problems of this world, and to fail to live in the truth is to fail to uphold justice, which is defined as living in accordance with truth, i.e., creating maximal harmony through one's actions and omissions, having the greatest positive and harmonious influence upon reality through one's agency. Acknowledging that no man is an island entire unto himself is an imperative to avoid the trap of the false self and concomitant selfishness and all of the inner harmony generated through a life of selfishness. All problems in the world are traceable to this fall of man, this detachment from the higher planes of spirit and immersion in the mire of matter wherein he swims in the sewer of his iniquities and accommodates chaos through willful ignorance and pursuit of selfish desire. This desire often comes in the form of pathological altruism and a God complex, the proliferating of the sins of others accelerating the chaos of the end times to the doomsday point. Only an Aryan can save us now, and the mundane white man must strive to live in the truth in a transcendent state of consciousness beyond the contingencies of spatio-temporal reality and the petty and selfish desires which characterize him as a mundane. Many are called but few are chosen, and only those truly noble, Aryan, of spirit, may lead us to a kingdom of heaven upon earth. Part 2. Aryan power. The term Aryan is often a source of confusion, and indeed, by virtue of its historically ambiguous references and meaning, is a term used to generate confusion. Such as Fritjof Schuon, an Islamic convert following in the footsteps of René Guénon in his essay The Meaning of Race, attempts to nullify the biological hierarchy of the Hyperborean tradition as was reflected in the Vedic caste system. He was merely representing similar trajectories of thinking deriving from such as all as Oswald Spengler and Francis Parker Yockey, who attempted to either downplay the value of biological race or to qualify it along these lines of ambiguation, rendering the concrete, material, biological race merely subsidiary to a spiritual race, defining race as or feeling or instinct, and yet failing to present a positive doctrine of race supportive of this traditional hierarchy, as was done by Julius Evola in his work The Synthesis of Racial Doctrine, with his tripartite conception of race, the race of the body, the race of the soul, and the race of the spirit. Employing a deliberate ambiguation and of the race idea has thus been their strategy, and that of those who sought an affiliation with another otherwise distinct racial group for personal advantage or the advantage of their tribe. Herein the term Aryan designates the biological race of conventionally labeled European Caucasian people, regardless of historical geographic origins, they who are of a relatively similar biological type, physically identifiable in the Hyperborean archetype, the blue-eyed blonde-haired Nordico-Germanic type, and that which is sufficiently similar thereto to qualify as white on a physical level. Beyond the physical and following Julius Evola's tripartite conception of race, they who approximate the solar Uranian spiritual type and who have a transcendent consciousness not rooted in the transience of this world, qualify as white. Only they who are biologically on a physical basis white, though elevated in their consciousness through an attachment to a higher spiritual principle, to the nucleus of their being and its divine origins, can be spoken of as Aryan within this work. Those who are merely white, for example, but who have the consciousness or soul of a Jew or Negro, are disqualified from being categorized as Aryan and are respectively spiritual Jews or Uyghurs or whatever other variant or permutation of racial type they may be. This is not to take away from the brute power of whites or even perhaps their highly intellectual, superlatively developed brain power, wholly confined within the prison of this matricized world of Zion. They are indeed a powerful race, their powers perversely exploited as useful labor by the black magicians of Zion, and many of this class of slavers are themselves white, however black their hearts may be and however steeped in mendacity and the vile rites of Kabbalistic black magic and however bound up with the vile entities with whom they work to achieve their despotism. The mercenary soldiers and police, the lawyers, judges, teachers, preachers, etc. all might be superlatively powerful on both the brute physical and rational basis but are nonetheless disqualified from having the term Arian ascribed to them owing to their self-serving and diabolical nature. They are, rather than being a noble metal of philosophical gold molded into a statue to last through the ages, instead a crude construction of base metal alloyed with fool's gold and possibly given a coat of spray paint to create the appearance of 24-carat purity of body, soul and spirit. Far from a noble being, they constitute the ignoble nobility of Zion and are the foremost agents of the social chaos of this world as, 1. Not only have they the power to stop Jury and their other affiliates in tearing down a potentially harmonious civilization, but 2. They are the architects of the destructive blueprint Jury has attempted to impose upon the world, their executive and subordinate minions who, catering to their own base-born selfishness, facilitate their own destruction and that of their race through their blind greed and power madness. Their hubris, in their Icarian flight off the cliff of harmony, has precipitated the near destruction of the rest of the herd who do not so much follow them as are dragged behind them to their destruction. In discussing the power of the Arian, we may, however, in spite of the foregoing, touch upon the lower elements of the race, that of white power in its physical and in its rational manifestations, the latter, partaking to a greater degree in the higher states of being. With respect to physical power, the white race, as the history of the world has shown, are the strongest race on earth. This, the writer contends, derives from our godly origins and is not explicable in purely physical terms. Regardless of causes, the evidence reveals this to be true. Our tendons are thicker, our muscle bellies longer, our bones denser, our form more compact and yet not disproportionate, neither too long nor too short, a perfect machine whose image derives from the devise of Hyperborea, the perfect manifestation of the gods, even in spite of varying degrees of admixture with the anthropoids over the course of time. The white race, having this connection to higher states of being, have a superlative willpower that enables them to employ their physical form to endure hardships and challenges beyond that of the average non-white. They can suffer greater pain though simultaneously being affected by it, sensing it, not like the insensate beast men whose coarse senses necessitate a greater stimulus in order to elicit a response. If white man endowed with such a superlative willpower has a capacity for greater endurance, and this in spite of his greater capacity to feel pain, being of a superlatively developed mind, at a spiritual level, and of a superlatively developed brain. Having a greater and more sensitive nervous constitution, he is nonetheless capable of transcending pain and suffering, and this for a greater period of time than the non-whites, whose comparatively weak willpower erupts initially in a paroxysm of violence, then peters out in a short time in nervous exhaustion owing to their weaker constitution. The physical capacity of the white race can be observed in the French Foreign Legion, the SS officers of the Third Reich, the berserker warriors of Scandinavia and Germany, and in the more notorious sports heroes. Their physical capacity to endure pain and hardship and express their eminently transcendental properties through willpower, to the extent this can be expressed through brute physicality. The world's strongest man competition reveals the truth in microcosm of just who is the world's strongest man, all winners having been white and specifically Northern European and even more specifically Scandinavian, those closest to the Daivyas. Absolute strength is thus the exclusive possession of the white man. As regards sprinting and other feats of speed, this is not so much the white man's realm, and this owing to the higher insertion of tendons on long bones and comparatively lighter bone structure of the Negro, who receives this prize as it were by default, and certainly not owing to any superlative willpower or influence of consciousness or mind, but merely their anatomical structure. Ergo, for the Chinese weightlifters who are being placed upon a pedestal in contemporary times as a means of Jury attempting to demoralize whites and portray them as comparatively weak and decrepit. The anatomy of Chinese, being short and of a squat proportionality with shorter limbs, enables them to move the barbell more rapidly owing to the shorter distance required to perform the lift. Pound for pound, the white man is the best physical specimen overall, which is well expressed in triathlons and other multi-sport competitions. In terms of fighting sports, he excels overall, being of a medium physical constitution, compact, muscular but not gangly and disproportionate in terms of limb length relative to the torso, etc. His physical power is telegraphed against the opponents in the same manner as against the inanimate objects of strength sports through a superlative willpower which, in spite of the Jewish monopoly on fight sports, can be seen in such figures as Rocky Marciano in boxing, George St. Pierre in MMA, and Frank Dux in karate. The virtual monopoly on these sports by jury has demoted the white man to second place, and this even in spite of the superlative qualities he possesses, thus illustrating the lack of merit of those who have attained Pyrrhic victories in the Matrix system. Recourse for a facsimile of masculinity is available for the white man only in the form of serving the system as either a gladiator as above, and this not reflecting his true merit, or as a mercenary soldier in the Jewish occupation government system. This pseudo-masculinity is a kosher machismo which is served up as a substitute for a higher form of transcendent consciousness and will manifesting itself in detached action. Here this pseudo-masculinity exists only in time, though it may manifest in the appearance of imminent transcendence and even to some extent partake thereof, but, by virtue of affiliation with the system, the falsehood of the purpose of his actions reduces its apparently transcendent action to a purely physical level of bestial aggression. He has not been able to overcome himself as his true self, and accordingly his true will is not being upheld and pursued, but rather the false self of the hypocrite, that of a system stooge who facilitates its false purposes in the name of meaningless phrases, democracy now, humanity, peace, God, etc. Aryan power exists even in the depths of matter, and this is the nucleus of the being of the white man, his very spirit, which might be properly associated with what Jörg Lanz von Liebenfels called the divine electron or the Graal, the blue blood of the Hyperborean Diviers. At a superior level of the being of the white man who is not yet Aryan, though maybe in potentia, he expresses his Aryan power in works of art, music, plastic and visual art, architecture, creative expressions of his being which are a direct translation of his attempts to realize the conception or the idea as Hegel defined art, the translation of the order or structure of reality into a concrete representation thereof, expressing the ideas in a harmony and thus bringing beauty into the world through his creative will. His artistic achievements can be subordinated into a hierarchy of creative value. At the lowest level is the creation of the wig or the telluric orthonic creation of the animal man, who is nonetheless white, albeit a degraded and inferior type. The example of the white rapper or a comic book writer or video game designer occupies this level of white identity. At a higher level, which could be correlated with that of the emotional level of consciousness, with the more intellectualized form would be the work of art of the bourgeois intellectual, a scholar or jazz musician or some equivalent type. This art form is that of a rationalistic molding of an emotional state of the subpersonal. Sigmund Freud and Marxist culture is an example of this, as is the culture of Christians, which, though paradoxical in the eyes of some, are both a dressed-up form of emotional states of consciousness and, in the form of bourgeois culture, dressed up in the guise of rationalist abstractions, especially in contemporary times in that of scientism, applied to phenomena and given an aesthetic veneer. The art of rational man is that of the Judaized Gentile, the fusion of emotion and reason, whose nom de plume may be called rationalized sentimentalism, the codification of the human all too human in artistic form. Some of this culture has redeemable elements for both whites and Aryans. In the case of whites, it puts certain categories of people in their place and elevates or devolves depending on who controls the culture. An example is the popular culture of fascist Italy or National Socialist Germany, with its broader mass appeal qualifies as a positive, authentic expression of the white consciousness and serves to elevate it to a higher level of existence. Whereas the culture of Marxist materialism and bourgeois intellectualism under the Jewish regime drags one downward to the depths of the subpersonal and shifts, more importantly perhaps, one's consciousness away from a Volkish orientation toward an abstract universalism, a rootless cosmopolitanism of purely human, all too human invention. Aryan creativity pervades even the lowest type of the white race owing to their sharing in the Graal or divine electron. Art which may be truly spoken of as Aryan, however, cannot be accomplished by the lower elements save for some form of divine intervention or guidance on the part of higher forces who, for a moment, use the lower white as an instrument of their will. Aryan artists are typically born and are, like Mozart or Bach, child prodigies whose genius finds aesthetic form from an early age. At present, all art has been either monopolized or suppressed by the dark forces who seek to sabotage and destroy the higher and drag down to the lowest depths of the instinctive mind the exceptional man of genius. True art is a mediation of the higher planes in concrete sensuous form, sound, sight, and to a lesser extent the tactile senses, all accompanied by the higher senses beyond the human level. Such art can only be spoken of as divine, and this can be observed in the exact proportionality of ancient temples, the harmonics of Bach, and the aesthetic designs of the Celts and Scandinavians, now diminished as an echo in Islamic art. Imagination and capacity for invention of whites is optimally presented in the form of artistic genius through the will and skill of the Aryan. Only an Aryan may create Aryan art. Literary works of modernity are poor approximations of the poetic genius of the Edda, the Nibelungenlied, and Argiveda as examples, poetry always preceding literature in terms of attaining spiritual heights of consciousness, and literature being more a Jewish devolution of poetry, the linear, rationalist, purely human language being superseded by the suprahuman dream language of poetry, which connects word, image, and idea within a few lines or words, elevating the base of human language to the status of the noble language of the gods. Aryan power thus is expressed both in coarse physical form and higher aesthetic form, and reveals an elevation of the lower levels of consciousness. The highest expression of Aryan power is that of magic. Being the descendants of the gods, the Divis of Hyperborea, the power of the gods is inherent in the Aryan, the spiritually elevated and relatively pure white, now no longer white but Aryan in the sense of spiritual superiority, connected to higher planes of being and endowed with the capacity to attain those heights. The historical degeneration of the white population to the level of the Uyghur or Judaized Gentile has been largely, though not exclusively, the result of miscegenation. Additional causes of this drop in his level of consciousness to that of the white mundane, a Uyghur or a Judaized Gentile, are the perfidious nature of Jewry, their subtle creep into Aryan society, and its degradation to the level of the white society on the way to a cloaca gentium of multicultist hell on earth, an inferno of Volk chaos. These additional causes are at least twofold: 1, the Jewish instigated influence predominantly, and 2, the intrusion of non-whites who modify and some would say contaminate the culture organism of the white race, introducing chaos into the otherwise harmonious essence of the Aryan. In the former case, Jewry willfully and with malice aforethought introduces the grains of ferment into the white society as above via ideological and material drugs, their divisive and degenerative ideologies of Christianism, liberalism, and their drugs of body and soul destroying potions, pills, and various herbs or plants. White weakness occurs when the white population who is susceptible to degradation partakes of this forbidden fruit and leads itself downward into corruption owing to its fatal flaws of lack of inner strength and self-control, an inner lack of transcendent capacity. Hence the white spirituality, which potentially was of an Aryan nature, is dragged down into the pit of corruption and becomes modern in the traditional sense of the pseudo-spirituality of the Kali Yuga, both in the form of New Ageism or Christianism. The Jewish element of corruption had seeped into the original Aryan spirituality through the more profane whites, enabling this intrusion, again out of a curiosity for novelty, sticking their finger into the bear trap of the mysteries placed before them by Jewry and becoming snagged by the Jew in a harmful thought form. The corruption of the caste system, enabling Vaishyas and other lower elements to intrude, seems to have been a common occurrence in the ancient world, perhaps the altruistic whites enabling Jews and other foreigners to enter in out of a desire to learn and share their knowledge with others in addition to their quest for novelty. 14. As the mysteries became corrupted in the case of the Druids with Jewish intrusion, transforming the spiritual cadre of priests who had ensured a harmonious world order into a vile sect of human sacrifice, a Semitic death cult which had a later analogue in the Aryan, Mayan, and Aztec civilizations, which were themselves subject to similar transformation under the deleterious influence of Jewry. Hence what ensued was a massacre of the innocent, the white gods having departed and having taken with them their spiritual protection, leaving the corrupt and irredeemable elements of the priest caste as servitors of the demonic entities who feasted upon the pain energy of the sacrificed multitude and possessed their earthly agents of destruction. action, perpetuating the ruination of the once spiritually oriented society. In the Middle East, similar occurrences transpired under the influence of the international Jew. The child sacrifice cults which sprang up around Canaan were once again the result and product of Jewish infiltration. The book The History of Human Sacrifice by the Jewish Lord Acton details these practices in their horror and yet downplays the Jewish influence. Written in the 1800s, it was a revelation of the method of the arcane rites of Jewish witchcraft after it had attained a comfortable position through its ascent by way of the French Revolution and its hypocritical pretense of humanitarian love, the mask behind which the murder cults of Jewry conceals itself. Hence in the 1800s the bloody revolutions erupted as so many powder kegs of violence which opened up spaces in the spatio-temporal continuum to enable the inner space vampire entities Jewry is bound up with to enter into the earth and facilitate the downward spiral of the Kali Yuga, bringing more misery, bloodshed and chaos as the Findisi Ekla wound its way down to the cataclysm of world wars, famines, and perpetual revolution, all multiplied like a virus throughout the world. One might claim it was the emancipation of the Jews which precipitated this fall when they were given citizenship in the 1800s in various countries throughout Europe, starting with France. However, it was simply a symptom of the cycles of time and the fall of man, as well as being a causal influence of the chaos of the crisis of the modern world. In contemporary times, the black magic of Jewry has only become popularized and given a facelift, one comprised of dead fetal tissue and Botox injections. It has become a mainstream phenomenon, and the terminal madness of the end times, as Baudrillard called it, is upon us. And Christ won't save us, it is up to us to save ourselves. Contemporary masonry mirrors the fall from grace of Aryan man. It reflects the degeneration not only of the racial stock of Aryans, become white, then Uyghurized and Judaized Gentiles, but of the increasing influence of foreign culture, who is of a necessarily cacophonous nature and has created the Volk chaos Hitler spoke of in Mein Kampf. This present epoch is the social chaos spoken of by René Guénon in his work The Crisis of the Modern World and Modern Masonry, as far as a writer can infer looking through a glass darkly, is a profaned mystery indeed, thoroughly Judaized and brought low from its presumed Aryan height in its origins in the misty past of paleo history. Glenda the Good Witch of the East has been abducted and imprisoned in the Tower of the Wicked Witch of the West of the Semitized Black Magicians, who have corrupted the mysteries, transforming them from the purity of Gnosis to the profanation of political intrigue they have become. The minds of the Aryan elite been poisoned with the corrosive waters of the Well of Mimir by the poisoner Jew, who has crept in the dead of night and added the hallucinogens of the ideoplasmations of the Demiurge, inebriating in the minds of their captives with his illusory dreaming, or rather nightmares. This is Gandalf in Moria fighting the Balrog. He is in the depth of the nadir of the Kali Yuga, in the bowels of Moria, and must become an angel in the whirlwind to conquer the dark forces. Unfortunately, like Saruman, most have gone over to the dark side and are serving the enemy and their god, the great architect of the universe. The French movie Occult Forces, whose director and writer were both assassinated after its release, depicts modern masonry in its proper light. Modern masonry has become the mind or genius of the ferment of decomposition, the source of world unrest and its ultimate cause as the crucible in which this chaos is generated under the influence of the dark forces. This is the mastermind of our woe, but is reflected as a shadow in mainstream churchianity as well. Most Christian clergy are Freemasons, and their church hierarchy is graded on an initiatic basis, with the elders of the church being Masons of corresponding levels. The seemingly faux opposition between masonry and churchianity is the illusion that keeps the sheep coming back for more out of fear of the boogeyman of Freemasonry and huddling around their shepherd priest king of the order of Melchizedek, as the angels, their ostensive protectors, feast upon their souls and the priests spaced likewise, from the collection plate and tithings, as well as upon the bioenergy of the fearful and foolish flock. For the black magicians, this is the golden fleece they have substituted for that of the philosophical gold of the mysteries, now the philosophical fool's gold of Saruman of the white hand of modern masonry, a reflection of the dark clouds of the Kali Yuga in the fetid pool of the Cloaca Gentium. The consciousness of the Diviers lies dormant in the white race of today, however it is still a presence and must be activated in order to kindle the revival of a higher spirituality. The blood memory latent in the blood and in the brain sand of the pineal gland is only activated through the activation of the higher centers of consciousness and their material organs, from the solar plexus to the heart, to the pineal gland and pituitary body, to the cerebellum, all activated and able to bring into being the blood memory of the Divyas through magic and exercises of consciousness elevation. The spiritual heights of former times may still be attainable even in spite of the degradation of our reality within this world. Indeed, it is not an external savior figure who will save the white race, but oneself alone who will do so. Aryan power is first and foremost spiritual power, and regardless of one's rank in the system of modern corruption and its regression of castes, one has the option to improve oneself and work in a positive direction. Failure to do so is itself a symptom of weakness of the will and weakness of one's inner nature. They who gravitate toward destruction along downward trending paths leading to the abyss are their own worst enemy. Such pathos as those of Jewish ideology. The upward climbing path is the most difficult, and ascending the mountaintop can only be attained through willpower and skill, the heightened awareness of an adept regardless of the depth of his position. 17.